And this is, again, not just customer experiences, it's everything in life, basically. So you have those two things. And this is the real key thing. And I think this, when I first heard this, I thought to myself, bloody hell, this has got some serious implications for the customer experience industry. And that is, he says that we don't choose between experiences. We choose between the memory of an experience.
Welcome to the Delighted Customers Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Slayton, and I'm so glad you're here. I empower leaders to turn indifferent customers into loyal fans. I talk to guests with a wide range of expertise who share meaningful insights and wisdom.
I am so excited to have my guest on the Delighted Customers
Podcast and share ways to help you delight your customers.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Mark. Yeah, looking forward to this. It's been a while since we've spoken, but yeah, looking forward to it. Thanks for having me on.
It's so great to have you on. And again, one of the original luminaries in the customer experience world who was there right at the outset.
You're making me feel old now.
But you were a pioneer. I get it. But you were a pioneer, and I have so much wisdom, and I just can't wait to get into a conversation with you. If you don't mind, share with the audience kind of what led you up to where you are and what you do today. What are you doing?
Sure. The age bit is probably quite appropriate because I started in this game probably 22 years ago now. My boss said something to me when I was in corporate life, and my boss said something to me that was to change my life, which was that he wanted me to improve the customer experience, but to do it at least cost. So this is when I was in corporate life, and I thought to myself, that's really interesting. I wonder what a customer experience is. How do you do these things, etc. So I spent 3 years putting together a big program and rolling the program out, lots of learning in there. Then decided to, I thought that customer experience that nobody had really ever heard about was going to be a big thing. So decided to leave corporate life and take the bold step into working for myself. Did the well-worn path of writing a book. So wrote up my first book, of the first of eight that I've now written. I won't bore you with it all, but we've moved into providing consultancy services for many different organizations like Caterpillar and FedEx and American Express. And we provide consultancy services, training, some specialized research, and been doing that for the last 22 years.
So I'm guessing, and that's a great background and some great brands that you've worked with, had a chance to influence. I'm guessing from the accent that you're not from Tennessee. So did you get your corporate start back in the UK?
This was all started back in the UK. Okay. The interesting bit was that after the book came out, I was just getting so much calls from American businesses that I was flying over the pond all the time. We ended up buying a place over here. I'm in Florida at the moment, and now split my life between the two.
Yeah, we were just talking about that before we jumped on the podcast about how you're in Sarasota. I have a kid in Sarasota, and we're comparing notes on grandkids. But you have been doing tremendous work in the area and written eight books, as you say. Tell us about the last one. What's the name of the last one that you wrote?
The last one I wrote is called The Intuitive Customer. And it's all about understanding customer experience in a much more behavioral perspective. If I won't bore you with it all, but when I launched my first one, Building Great Customer Experiences, back in 2002, it was slightly different in the sense that it wasn't just looking at the rational side of an experience. It was looking at also the emotional side of an experience, and not, you know, not enough organizations even today think about that. The intuitive customer is more about understanding really why customers do things. And what we discover is that what customers say that they want and what customers actually do want, or what they say they're going to do and what they actually do, can be very different things. And therefore, understanding customer behavior is really, really important. And that comes under the heading of what's called behavioral science. So it's understanding effectively why human beings do what we do.
Yeah, and that's got to be really important when it comes to business decisions that you have to make.
Yeah, it's incredibly important, because what you discover is that some of the business decisions that you make, you think are logical, but they're not. And also, you know, it spreads into segmentation. So how are you segmenting your customers? You know, are you segmenting them on behavior or just general demographics? And it, you know, the example I always give is this, which I always think is a great example. You know, Disney know when they ask their guests what they would like to eat at a theme park, Disney know that people say they'd like to have an option of a salad. Disney also know that people don't eat salads when they go to theme parks. They eat hot dogs and hamburgers. So, and this feels a bit, this always feels a bit wrong when I say this, having been in customer experience for as long as I have. And that is that the irony is sometimes you've got to ignore your customers, what they're telling you, because either they're telling you the wrong thing because they don't want you to know because of some societal thing or whatever it may be, or they don't really know themselves and understand themselves well enough. So it absolutely goes down into decision making, and how you can get under the skin of what people are saying and look at more of what they are doing. And that for me, I hope would be a key takeaway for your audience, which is, for me, it's much more important to watch what customers do rather than what they say they're going to do, because those two things can be different.
Yeah, well, that's interesting, and you made me think about something. I'm working on I'm going to be teaching at MSU in the customer experience management program. The course is customer relationship management, and it's relevant to what you were just talking about. And so we're trying to understand a framework for what drives loyalty. Right. What drives loyalty? There was some study, you mentioned Tennessee a minute ago, just joking around, but there was a study from a guy named Oliver a while back on what he called the four phases of loyalty. And I just want to get your reaction to that, because he said there's this cognitive part at the very beginning of getting to know a brand that is mostly cerebral, going back to the rational piece of it. And then eventually there's an affect stage where they start to have a bit of a preference for the brand, but they're still vulnerable to all sorts of things, anything, price, competition. But they're moving into a place where they go from just the head knowledge to now, do I like this? You know, what are my preferences? And then the third phase he calls cognitive, where you get into repeat purchases, a sense of loyalty with an intention to be a customer, but again, not that commitment level. And the last piece is the action phase, where I'm not only bought into your brand, I will defend the brand. I will forgive you when you mess up, to a point. So those are the four phases that Oliver presented back in 1999 in a paper he did. What have you found behaviorally since you were talking about that?
Yeah, so I think what's missing from that is again, it's the why. Okay. So let me take a step back, because, you know, I think a lot of these things are people overanalyze them. Okay. And I think one of the things for me is to just look at sort of yourself and think about, why do you do things? Okay. So let me explain what I mean. If I said to you, I've got this really great family. They're a lot cheaper to run than your existing family. Do you fancy swapping? You know, it's funny because people don't do that. You don't make a decision on your, you know, what family you want based upon the logical costs of what they're going to be, etc. Okay. And so what we discover is that loyalty is about an emotional attachment. When you think of the people you are loyal to, if I was to say to you, well, let's ask you, Mark, who are the people you are loyal to in your life, truly loyal to? Who would the people are that you would say that they are?
Yeah, I would say my family, my wife, my kids, my grandkids. Yeah.
And they can do things to you that really annoy you. And if you're anything like my family, I'm sure they do. but you love them and you would do anything for them.
Yeah.
And therefore there is that emotional bond there. Okay. So when we talk about loyalty in the business sense, effectively what people talk about is the fact that they want their customers to give them all their business. That's effectively what they're saying. But, you know, loyalty is based on an emotional attachment. So you use the phrase customer relationship management, and there's a key word there clearly, which is relationship. Okay. Right, and again, relationships are formed on emotions. So again, you think of the word loyalty, that's an emotional attachment. Relationship is an emotional attachment. So the issue becomes, well, what emotions drive those things? Okay. And how can you tell? And therefore, in that model that you just gave there, the issue becomes, it's that level below. So here's a question for you. Yeah. What emotions for your company, and I can't necessarily answer this, but what emotions for your company drive loyalty? Okay. When I did my third book, DNA of Customer Experience, How Emotions Drive Value, we did 2 years worth of research with London Business School, and we identified 20 emotions that are proven to drive value. And when I say value, I'm talking about money. I'm talking about loyalty, net promoter as a sort of a measure of loyalty, brand awareness, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there are 20 emotions. I won't bore you with them, but they're things like happiness, pleased, trust, cared for. And there are eight negative emotions that will drive disloyalty, things like frustration, stress, hurried, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And therefore, again, the point I'm trying to make is, well, you know, you're trying to create a loyal customer. You understand that there is an emotional attachment to that. You've got to build that emotional attachment. Well, what emotion are you trying to build then? And don't just say we want an emotional attachment because that's too broad. Well, what is it? Is it trust you've got to build up? Is it you know, is it feeling valued? Is it feeling pleased? What is it? And then the question becomes, well, how are you going to do that? So how are you going to design your experience to specifically evoke that emotion? Because you know it will, therefore in doing that, that emotion will lead you towards creating a loyal customer. Does that make sense?
It makes sense, and I'm gonna throw out sort of an illustration and see what you think about it as it applies to what you just said. We were talking about our friend Lou Carbone, yeah, who wrote a book called Clued In, and you know his roots were in the advertising world, and he came, yeah, into the CX world, and you knew him from way back when. He had talked in an earlier podcast that I had him on about Disney. And yep, the way they design Main Street, like the exit area, the entrance and, yep, exit area, and how it's not perfectly symmetrical. It actually, you know, it has the appearance of a longer entrance, the way that, yep, the buildings are skewed, and a shorter exit. And that's all by design.
Yes. Yes, no, absolutely. So that is, you know, creating and Lou's great at this stuff, creating the physical structure to create that environment. But it also, for me, goes further than that, which is, you know, it's the classic example of you can tell someone to say, have a nice day. But when the employee says, have a nice day, do you really believe that they're genuinely saying it or not? And most of them aren't, you know?
Yeah.
And therefore, it's that what emotion are you evoking? So if you go, I mean, again, if you take it back to something that people can relate to just think of your personal life again, okay? And you think to yourself, what does cared for look like? So when somebody feels cared for, what does it look like? Okay. Mm-hmm. And most people will say, yeah, when I've personally felt that someone's cared for me, then I feel that they understand me. They've listened to me. They felt that I'm the only person there. They've spent time with me. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you then just pick out those words, you know, listened, understood, spent time, then how does that apply in a business setting? So if you're trying to evoke feeling cared for, then how does that apply when the customer's phoning you? How does that apply in the digital environment? You know, how do those things apply? So you can take those sort of big concepts and those big feelings, and then you can either take it down to, well, that means we've got to create Disney World to have these streets that go in there, and we've got to do this, and we've got to build that infrastructure, or we've got to think about how the customer interacts, how the employees interacts with the customer as well, to create that cared for and loyalty, et cetera.
Yeah, that's really good. So you think about the emotions that are positive, that attract, and those that are negative, trying to stay away from those.
Yeah.
Right? And how do you design that or build that into the experience that customers have?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, on one side of it, it's not rocket science.
Yeah, right.
I mean, it's not rocket science, but you know, again, your listeners now, if you think about the business that you're in, okay, think about what emotion are you trying to evoke? So here's a very simple question that I ask all businesses that I've asked them for years, which is, what's the experience that you're trying to deliver? Okay. Can you articulate to me what the experience is that you're trying to deliver? So in other words, when a customer comes in and you're talking to them, you're dealing with them over the web, whatever it may be, when they leave, what would they say about your experience? And is that the experience that you're trying to deliver? And what we discover is that most organizations can't articulate that. And given that 50% of a customer experience is about how a customer feels, what emotion are you trying to evoke? And again, what we discover is that most organizations don't know what emotion they're trying to evoke in their customers. And therefore, by definition, they don't do it. Or one part of the organization does this, another part does that. And the customer, as we know, then feels that, hold on, that's a bit disjointed. They're telling me one thing, they're telling me something else. And that builds up the level of frustration and all those other things. But that then comes to, that sort of goes underneath all of this. So you've got an emotion. And the interesting question for me has always been, well, why was that emotion? Why did I feel that emotion? Okay. What was it that made me feel those things? Hmm. Which is where we get into then this whole area of behavioral science, which is then looking at well, how do human beings make, and I say human beings because obviously customers are human beings, how do we make human beings make decisions, and what are the ways that we do that? And you know that we do a podcast called The Intuitive Customer, where I talk with the guy that co-wrote the book with me, a guy called Professor Ryan Hamilton from Emory University. And we talk about, you know, that whole area. And one of the most interesting areas is the area of memory, which again, because if you think about loyalty, and tell me, Mark, if I'm rattling on too much, mate.
No, I was just going to ask you about the connection to memory.
Yeah, well, because once I get running on this stuff, you can't.
I'm like you, man. I get it.
But so this is the connection, which I've got to tell you, I find absolutely fascinating. Okay. So let me just start at the beginning. And we did three shows on this. So we're not going to be able to cope with it all today. There's a guy called Professor Daniel Kahneman, okay, and he's famous in the area of behavioral science, okay, and what Kahneman talks about is memory, amongst other things. All right, so let me take a step back before I go down that route to link it to memory, so people can understand why I'm talking about this. If you think about loyalty, okay, loyalty means that I have bought from you in the past and I am going to buy from you again. Okay, that's loyalty. Because if we didn't, so consequently, it's based around memory. Mm. Yeah. Okay, because you bought from them in the past. Mm. And you've started down that four box process that the chap that you mentioned earlier spoke about. Mm-hmm. And you thought that was good. Yeah. Okay. And I'm now starting to become a loyal customer. So if you think about it, loyalty is a function of memory. Okay. Now, what Kahneman talks about is, and this is the big question for me, which is, okay, well, if memory is that important, how are memories formed? Because I need to know how memories are formed to be able to influence what the memory is that my customer has of my interaction. Yeah.
Right.
And what Kahneman talks about is the fact that we have two selves. We have our, experiencing self, which is the self now. For you and I, it's when we're doing this recording. For your listener, it's as they're physically listening to this recording. Okay.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The experiencing self, what you're experiencing in the moment. And what Kahneman also talks about is the fact that we have a remembering self, which is what we remember from this recording. Okay. From whatever that interaction experiences that you've had. And this is, again, not just customer experiences. It's everything in life, basically.
Right.
So you have those two things. And this is the real key thing. And I think this, when I first heard this, I thought to myself, bloody hell, this has got some serious implications for the customer experience industry. And that is, he says that we don't choose between experiences. We choose between the memory of an experience. So let me repeat that. We don't choose between experiences. We choose between the memory of an experience. So if I was to come to your hometown and say, hey, Mark, I'm you know, gonna go out for a meal one in your hometown, what restaurant would you suggest I go to? Okay. You are going to scan back in your memory and go, yeah, that's a good one. You know, yeah, go here, Colin. So again, it's also about, therefore, the memory. So the issue becomes, yeah, if the memory is more important than the experience, then what creates the memory? And what Kahneman talks about is what is called the peak end rule, which basically means that what we remember in an experience, again, for our lives, but also applies to a custom experience, is we remember the peak emotion that we felt, and we remember the end emotion that we felt. Okay? So we remember the peak emotion, and we remember the end emotion. The peak emotion can be positive or negative. So it could be a negative emotion, but it's the most intense emotion that we feel. And the same applies at the end. And endings are more important than the peak. Okay? So given that, okay, so now we know to create a memory, to create loyalty, it's all about the peak end rule. So that raises some, as you know, customer experience professionals, that raises some interesting questions. Like, well, where is the peak emotion in our customer's journey, whatever journey we're looking at? Where's the peak emotion? What are they feeling? What are they feeling today? And what do we want them to feel tomorrow? Yeah. What's the end emotion that they're feeling? What do we want them to feel? And which emotion drives most value? What return are we going to get by evoking these emotions at the peak and at the end? And how are we going to go about it doing it? And how do we, you know, now we're into that sort of whole implementation bit, which is, you know, how do you physically get people to feel cared for and so on and so forth? So memory is absolutely key in driving loyalty. And without that, and without going under the hood, you know, you're not going to get very far. And you've got to start thinking about, when you're building your journey maps, identifying the peak and the end, looking at what emotions are being evoked and what emotions you want to be evoked, et cetera, et cetera. Does that make sense?
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think about, all I can think about is all the people now are saying, there are a number of people out in our world, in our profession, that are saying journey maps are obsolete. We don't need, you know, to go through that process. Things like AI can tell us what the customer does, thinks, feels, et cetera. So they're going to be,
So yes and no. Okay. And maybe we need another podcast to go down into this whole track, but let me give you a thought, because I think it's key. So at the moment, when people are designing their AIs, there's effectively, there are two elements that they are focusing on, and a third that they're not. Okay. So let me give you an example. A telecoms company fairly recently asked its AI to tell them when a customer was going to leave them. Okay. It came back and said, these customers are going to leave. When they then asked the AI, why are they going to leave? It couldn't tell them. And the reason it couldn't tell them is because they hadn't asked the right question in the first place. So the two areas that are key is the data and how you're training your AI. And the thing that is really important that you have to train the AI on is this whole area of behavioral science. So building AI, as we know, is good at pattern recognition, but it will come back and say, here's a pattern, these customers are leaving. Whereas you want it to say, these customers are leaving, and the reason they're leaving is because of this aspect of your experience that is being impacted by the way that you're treating them and that understanding of AI. Does that make sense?
Yeah, makes perfect sense.
You know, training them on the peak end rule and training the AI on, look, yeah, you know, there's a pattern here, and it's actually called the peak end rule, and therefore it's a bit like the, have you ever seen Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy?
I have not.
No. Okay. So it's a great sort of spoof science fiction book. And I won't bore you with it all, but they had this great great session in it, and it was a movie as well as a book, where they basically asked this supercomputer that had been that they'd built to go off and find the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Yeah, what was the answer to life, the universe, and everything? And after 10 million years of processing, it came back and said the answer is 42. Okay.
Yeah.
But what I'm trying to indicate there is going, well, actually, the supercomputer is going to be more intelligent than you. You just may not understand the answer when it comes back. So you think about, you know, is the answer effectively going to be actionable? Will you understand what the patterns are when you're building the AI? And that is important as part of loyalty.
So going back to journey mapping, will journey mapping become obsolete because of AI?
Yeah, I've said that I think that journey mapping will become obsolete, because I think that what will replace it is effectively a memory maps. So, you know, the if you think about a journey map is about the experiencing self, what I'm experiencing. Yeah. And again, it's a subtle difference, but an important difference. A memory map is about what has a customer remembered. Now, what AI will be able to do is be able to pick up all of the different points that the customer has touched you and where those memories have been built. As long as, and again, this is a danger, and we had an AI specialist on the show the other week, that, you know, because one of the problems that organizations, classic stuff of what they're doing now, and it's just like what everybody did when the web came out, which is all parts of all individual silos within an organization are all busy implementing their own AI systems. You know, just like when the internet was created, okay, you know, everyone went off and every section of the company built their own website. And then we got to the point where everyone went, why is it when I contact this customer, you know, I'm dealing with this major company and I'm buying that product, I'm dealing with that type of website, and I'm buying that, and it's the same company, and I'm buying that product from, and it was all different. The same's going to happen with AI if you're not careful. Is everyone's going to have their own version of AI, and it's not going to integrate, and it's not going to provide that unique view of the organization to understand the patterns, to understand the memory that's being formed, to create the loyalty.
Yeah, so that's a great point. And, you know, it just sort of, it's history repeating itself. Use the internet example, but the same is true with AI, is that if we're not reading off the same sheet of music, you know, then we're going to create all these different, potentially competing aspects of the experience that aren't starting with the customer. And yeah, to your point, their memory of the experience you're having. Yeah. I have a follow-up question for you. It just coincidental today, I was on a meeting with a number of CX professionals, CX people like me, who somebody asked us to get together and help a bunch of CX practitioners. And I don't know what else to call it, but a think tank kind of a situation. We're helping them in their businesses. And I think the focus of this is around AI and how to implement it in organizations effectively. And my question to you, and this came up in the meeting, is so the CX leader oftentimes has a small budget, has a limited staff, has everything they, and I'm exaggerating here, but everything they need to get done is through influencing others. Mm-hmm. to get things accomplished. So given that reality, if it's true, you know, what can CX leaders do? What is their role, or what is their best approach as this new wave comes upon us of AI in an organization given the realities of the CX leader?
Yeah, so I think for me, it, and let's go back to the very beginning of this conversation. When I was working in corporate life, that was my job, okay? So I've been there and done it, basically. What you've got to do is you've got to ask some really clever, sensible questions and challenge. So you've got to understand your subject and be able to answer a question like, what's the experience that we're trying to deliver? Okay, can somebody tell me that? You know, and that is a very powerful question in itself. And again, just thinking of your audience. If I was you, if you're in a room, get people to say and say to them, what's the experience you're trying to deliver? Can you write down what you think it is, please? Okay. And then get everyone round the table to tell you what you think it is. And what it will demonstrate is that nobody knows. Okay. Therefore, you know, there's then the opportunity to go, well, don't you think we should? No. Okay. And if we're trying to build this AI system, yeah, don't you think that we should all, you know, because it's going to cost a lot of time, effort, money, resources to be able to answer those types of things. And how are we going to be going about training this AI system that we're building in? So if we agree that, and I hope people do, that from the conversation that I've had with you today, that emotions are important, then a question I would be asking would be, as a CX professional would be, how are we going to train the AI system then to recognize emotions? How are we going to, so, you know, go back to the telecoms company I spoke about earlier, you know, which customers are going to leave? When the AI comes back and tells us it's that group of customers, how are we going to understand why they're leaving us? You know, so it's asking, the point I'm trying to make is,
yeah,
you, the influence that you've got, you're not going to be able to do all these things, but you've got to challenge people in a positive way to get them to think about things. So here's another example, okay? And again, something that I've done, something I advise my clients to do. I would tell people, I would say in that influencing bit, I'd be going, I listened to this really interesting, so I, in other words, I'm one of your audience, I'm a CX, yeah. I'd be going, listen to, I send a note out, they would send a note out to their colleagues saying, I listened to this really interesting podcast the other day, Mark, and they were talking about, take a listen to it, okay? Because once again, they start to listen to the type of conversation that we're having, they can start to challenge them and get them to think about that type of influence.
Yeah.
And they've got to try to get some people on their side, some people that are, that they in a senior position that they can ask those types of challenging questions to and get them to realize that they don't know the answer, basically.
Yeah. And going back to that illustration that you shared of people in the room and asking this Socratic question about what is it we're trying to make them feel when they're experiencing our product? How do we want them to feel when they're experiencing us? And you say that we'll find out that nobody has an answer. I would add that almost the opposite from a practical standpoint, the outcome is the same, is that every person will have an answer. They'll just all be different.
Yes.
Right. And part of our conversation today was, you know, this, I'm not going to name job descriptions or people, or companies, but this person wants to use AI to reduce cost. Sure. This person wants to use AI to drive revenue. This person sure. wants to eliminate FTEs. This sure. person, you know, nobody's really saying, I want to improve the experience for the customer.
Sure. But to be honest with you, you know, in all the work that we've done over the last 20 years, I've never, ever been involved in a project that doesn't end up saving costs and improving right. the customer experience, because we know that poor customer experiences cost money.
Okay? Right.
And therefore, what's the bit that's missing is being able to identify some of those costs and how it can position with these things. the big danger that for me is that I think lots of organizations are going to waste time and effort by everybody doing their own little AI version. And then at some point in the not too distant future, turn around and go, oh, we've got all these different versions. Now we need one version. So let's go back. You know, again, just think of what's happened on the web, because it's just history repeating itself. So I think you've certainly got to think about, it's a bit like being a politician, to be honest with you. You got to think about how can you get everybody to feel like they're addressing their bit about revenue, and they're addressing their bit about costs, and they're addressing their bit about customer experience. What we know, and this is the honest answer, is that if you just go in from a customer experience perspective, you're going to lose out because people are more interested, unfortunately, in cost savings and getting in revenue than most organizations are than improving the customer experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I talk a lot about the importance of as a CX leader, becoming trustworthy, becoming more of a trusted guide than the hero, but you're the guide helping the organization. What that means is you have to be other focused and knowing that the constituents that you're helping out, you have to understand what motivates them, what drives them, what are their goals? What are they trying to accomplish? And speak their language rather than, like you said, a CX language.
Yes, yes. One of the things I did that I would really advise people to do, and this was when I was back in corporate life and running large projects myself, is get somebody from the finance team to work with you, okay? And get them to do an analysis of the revenues, how it's going to affect things, etc. So it's not just you as from a CX perspective that are saying, yes, this is a good idea. But you've then got the sign off, if you like, and the blessing of somebody within the finance team to agree that the approach that you're taking makes financial sense and will give you a return.
So just fascinating, Jims. I just want to go back and punctuate some of the things that you said. So, because there's a lot to unpack there. And you correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I got a few of them written down here. So, there's two selves. There's the experiencing self, and then there's the remembering self. And it's important to know that really it is about the remembering self. And we don't choose between experiences. We choose the memory
of the experience. That's right.
Of the experience. That there's this thing called the peak end rule, and the peak has to do with the peak of the experience, could be good or bad. And then the end part, which is the part that they really remember, could also be good or bad. But those are the real key inflection points in a journey for a customer.
Yeah, so let me just make sure you've got that 100% right. It's the peak emotion of that.
Peak emotion. Yeah. Good. Thanks for clarifying. Yep. You think that AI can really be effective if it's thought of in terms of memory maps. Memory maps will potentially eventually replace journey maps because they focus on that second part, that not the experience, but the actual remembering self.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, we haven't spoke about it, but, you know, very quickly, I think what will happen is we're on the cusp of a change between being providing a reactive experience to providing a proactive experience. And I think the competitive landscape will be around the companies that can provide a proactive experience that will be enabled through AI. Yeah. And I think over the next 10 years, that's going to be the battleground, basically.
And in theory, the customer experience will improve if that's the case.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So you will, if you can understand what the customer really wants, not what they're saying they want, if you can look at the things that they've done and the memories that are formed, you will be able to put all of that information together through AI and you will be able to say, this is what I recommend that we do for this customer. And I'm trying to be very clear with my words, not this group of customers, but this customer, because the pattern of behavior has been this. This is the memory that we built up in that customer, hence the memory map. Therefore, this is what we should do next. Some of that will be a proactive experience where it's automatic because it's just going to be done by technology. And some of it could be getting a customer, getting an agent to phone a customer up proactively, because actually, if they don't sort something out in three interactions time, that customer will leave them. And that goes back to that technology, the telecoms bit where they don't know why they're leaving them. You want to get in before they're just about to leave. You want to make sure that issue doesn't happen.
Yeah. And I know we talked about Joe Pine before, and I know you know him well, and he talks about this concept called customering, which, you know, is doing away with this idea of market segmentation and target marketing segments of customers, but that really, it's just a customer now.
It's a segment of one.
Absolutely. Segment of one.
Yeah.
Another gem. And then the last one, I love that. And then the last one is make friends with finance.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow. I was friends, but I didn't use it as a strategy. I should have. I really should have thought through that. And boy, could that have changed so much aches and pains and hard night's sleep.
Yes. No, absolutely. I used to have a finance person. I recruited a finance person from finance to be on my team. And he spent the whole day projecting what we were going to do, and he had the credibility and understood things and could articulate to his ex-colleagues exactly what was being done. So rather than just going, yeah, we think it's going to give us some ROI, but, you know, here's my napkin. I've written it on the back. This is what I think the business case looks like. They were actually able to put together a really good professional business case that was thought through.
And the brilliance of that is quite often, depending on where CX sits in the organization, whatever you're proposing, whether it comes from you or somebody else, is going to end up back at that CFO or the finance place. So if you're able to say it's been vetted already,
The
tailwinds.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's where doing the influence really starts coming about. And when you start getting, therefore, some money and people, everything, you know, it starts really cooking on gas, as they say.
Yeah. Well, this has been so much fun, so much gems compressed in such a short amount of time. Not bad for two grandpas. but I have one other question that I always ask at the end for my audience, and that is a more of a personal one. What advice would you give to your 20-year-old self?
Don't worry about what your career is going to look like. And what I mean by that is I, along with lots of other people, suddenly thought to myself that I had to define what type of job and what type of role that I needed to have, you know, for when I was 40 or 50. And who knew that I was going to be sitting here at this point in my life talking to you about customer experience and AI. That doesn't mean to say that you shouldn't have a plan. You should absolutely have a plan and a strategy, but you don't have to have the answer to the life, the universe and everything when you're 20 years old. You just need to be doing something that you think is, that you like and you're good at, whatever it may be. And things will pan out for you.
Nice. Well said. Colin, thank you so much for being on the Delighted Customer Show. It's been a privilege.
Good. No, it's been good. We had a really good conversation. Good. Thank you.
You got it. Thanks for listening to the Delighted Customers Podcast. I'd like to ask you a favor. If you have enjoyed this episode or any of my other ones, hit subscribe or follow. I've got a lot of other great guests that are coming up and a lot of other great content, and I don't want you to miss anything. You can find any links or references on the show in the show notes, and you can find those on my website at empoweredcx.com.